Too Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Hello and welcome to the Aware Show. I am Lisa Garr, and it's a true joy and a privilege to be here today with you. Thank you so much for joining me and for lending your energy to the show today for the next hour, because I guarantee you it's going to be an inspiring one. Have you ever thought, what can one person do to make a difference? And especially when it comes to the damage of our environment and what is being done by so many, have you ever thought, well, what can I do? Well, imagine if we all thought that. If we all thought, let's just think that it's going to be someone else that'll take care of it because I'm hopeless with just my one person. Do you think that's what my guest today has ever thought? His name is Shu Tezcat, and he is an amazing example of how one person can make a difference as long as he has a tribe of many involved. Shu Tezcat has headed to Congress, and he created an entire lawsuit against the U.S. government. And this lawsuit was basically holding the U.S. federal government accountable for violating their constitutional right to life, liberty, and property because of their lack of action on climate change. And there's a lot that we have to talk about between now and then. There is a trial date set for February, I believe, but we have a lot to cover. Welcome to the show. Shu Tezcat, thanks for joining me.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for the time, because I know that you've got a lot going on, and I know that you're speaking next weekend and all over the planet, which is amazing. But I first of all want to ask you, what is your background, or what is it that inspired you so much to really be such a steward for our planet?
Yeah, definitely. That's a good question. My dad is indigenous to Mexico. Mm-hmm. We're from the Mexica people. That's our ancestry. A lot of people know us as the Aztec tribe. My mom is from the United States. She's been an environmental activist a lot of her life, working with my older siblings on education and really empowering young people to create change within their communities, within their lives, and within the world, and really seeing how individual action can really reverberate out and represent and reflect in systemic change and systemic shifts and kind of a growth in the evolution of our consciousness is humanity. So I think just kind of this combination of the way that I was raised, the way that I grew up, it was absolutely significant and pivotal for my path as an activist, to really recognize my strong roots as an indigenous person and through my mother as you know, an earth warrior.
Mm. I mean, it's probably had to do a lot with love as well, because some people can be raised in that environment and go the absolute opposite direction, or think it's not cool, or, oh, this is, you know, I don't want to say any of this to my peers. You've heard that. You've seen that, right?
Definitely. No, I felt it, for sure.
You have?
I felt embarrassed about what I do in the past. Like, that's one thing I feel like people have a misconception about me, too. Like, you hear me speak often, or read articles or hear podcasts of me communicating and talking about my work and my movements, and get kind of this idea that I'm this very, you know, serious, mature, you know, well-spoken young individual. But on top of that passion for protecting the planet, I'm still such just a regular 17-year-old kid.
You know, let me ask you about that. Right. Because, my daughter's 15, and she's like, makes fun of my aware conversations all the time. We were just having this conversation on the way to school this morning, and I said, you know, you really know how to communicate with adults. I'm sorry that I never taught you how to communicate with your peers. That's kind of on you. You got to figure that one out on your own.
No, that's true. And I think that's the gap that I help bridge, too, with my voice, is like a lot of adults don't know how to communicate to youth, and a lot of people that are talking about incredibly critical issues such as climate change and environmental catastrophe and getting communities involved, they don't know how to reach out to a youth demographic. They don't know how to get young people involved.
Tell us how.
So for me,
then tell us.
I'm trying to like...
We'd love to know.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much bigger than just... I think you have to contextualize it so that it matters to young people. You have to have young youth invested. You feel me? So it's... It's for us, like, maybe we don't necessarily connect to graphs and statistics and that conversation surrounding climate change. But when we talk about climate change, we can really get young people involved when it comes to, you know, the arts or pursuing their passion. Like, for me, the way that I like to get young people involved is really bringing this conversation to them and saying, okay, what is it that you are passionate about? How can we get your opinion, your voice heard when it comes to what's happening in the world today? So it's, I think so much of it is just listening and just being kind of an approachable source that's like, I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. I'm here to hopefully inspire you to open a door where you can then step forward in a position of leadership and empowerment in whatever way that looks like to create positive change. So it's really meeting young people at where they're at a community level, you know, within their schools, in a way that they can engage with their peer groups in a way that isn't embarrassing, because I've felt that. And it, sometimes, like, I'll be at events, I'm like, dang, I'm embarrassed to be here. Like, I don't want to be seen here. You know, and obviously I think with maturity, like, that kind of goes away, but a lot of youth are still there. So, like, whether it's writing music or engaging in your passions, there's a lot of different ways where people can find kind of this bridge in which young people are more interested and excited about being a part of things.
You know, let's have this conversation because I feel that – and how old are you?
17.
So I feel responsible as an adult for leaving – your generation with the planet in this shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know, is there anger? Is there hopelessness in your generation? Is there a sense of what do we do now? Or is there fire in the belly? What's the feeling? What's the vibe?
I think there's a lot of hopelessness and apathy for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I have just like my personal connections with my peers and different people in my demographic is like a lot of youth are so apathetic and don't care and disconnected from this issue because it's too big, because they haven't been approached in the right way, because adults don't include them in the conversation. So it builds this kind of sense of disconnect between a younger generation and the very serious issues. And I'm not just saying like climate change, I'm talking about, you know, everything from school to social justice to having a healthy, positive community. Lots of kids just straight up don't care. Like, I think it's a very, you know, in It's a theme among a lot of people in my generation. And then another huge demographic of youth, I feel like, cares, understands, and knows what's going on, but is so overwhelmed by the facts, so overwhelmed by the crisis, so overwhelmed by the problems we see that they don't feel as though they can do anything as one person and as one voice, so they shut down. So in both of these cases, we have young people that aren't engaged, that aren't involved, and that aren't being a part of creating a solution, much less recognizing that they can do anything. So there are, at the same time, when young people feel like they have a platform, when young people feel like they're supported, when young people connect to that passion, they immediately recognize that they have an incredible opportunity to do something about some of the most important issues of our time. So I've seen those three things where young people are either incredibly engaged and activated because they feel supported and they feel invested, or young people are apathetic and disconnected or overwhelmed. So I think it's really about bridging those gaps, teaching the young people that are disconnected and apathetic how they are connected to these issues, why it should matter to them, why they can make a difference. You know, for the young people that are overwhelmed, showing them the tools that they need to actually be a part of the solution and not just worry about the issue.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
For those that are already on fire, like, support them so that flame stays lit.
Mm, yes. Now, you have a lot to do with supporting and getting our youth involved, but you went to a whole nother level with this. This is pretty incredible that you filed a lawsuit against the U.S. federal government. How did that happen?
Yeah, just for clarity, like...
Amazing.
I kind of feel bad because, like, a lot of times when this story is told, it's like, oh, you filed a lawsuit. Like, I'm actually not even the lead plaintiff in this lawsuit. I'm one of 21 kids.
Mm-hmm.
Each of which hold an equal stake in this lawsuit,
wow.
Each of which are equal plaintiffs that are very much invested in the issue of climate change, each of which has their own story of how they're being affected by this issue, and each of which who has been a powerful force and voice on the front lines of this movement. So I'm just one of 21 of us that are, and I think that makes the story even more powerful and more inspiring, that it's not just like one kid trying to be the face of a movement. It's actually so many that are standing up and fighting. But the way that this lawsuit came about, I was invited to be a part of it in 2015 when we filed a lawsuit against the Obama administration, saying that the Obama administration, the federal government, has, according to federal documents, has known about climate change for several decades, not only failed to act, but worked to hide the evidence, worked to create media campaigns to disprove the reality of climate change, worked with the fossil fuel corporations to offer everything from tax cuts to opening up federal lands for fossil fuel extraction to subsidizing fossil fuels. So doing so many things as the elected officials that are supposed to protect us and represent they're supposed to be beholden to the people, are actually acting in opposite of the best interest of the world we need and of the planet that we need and the action that we need to take and that is responsible, like that our politicians are responsible for. So what we said is that it doesn't matter. It's not about party lines. It's not about Democrat or Republican. That currently, the current administration is not doing enough to combat climate change, and that is a violation of our constitutional rights.
Our current administration is rolling back climate change initiatives. So, I mean, don't you believe that?
No. Straight up. I would say Trump is a lot worse for the environment than Obama was.
Right.
Doesn't mean Obama was perfect, though. Like, Obama did a lot of horrible things for the environment as well, from opening up federal lands for natural gas exploration, to just, like, taking so long and juggling the arguments of Standing Rock. Not enough was done on anybody's part. I don't think we've had a strong elected official that has made purely good decisions for our environment and for the climate. So,
other than Al Gore.
Both.
Yeah.
He wasn't ever really elected.
Right.
Bernie Sanders, you could say the same. So it's a big fight. We're against one of the most powerful governments on earth and multi-billion-dollar corporations. And it's 21 young people, the science, the stories, and hopefully working with the judicial branch to bring forth legal change and a legal shift in the system that we have. Because it's more critical now than ever, and our government is so responsible and has to be held accountable to their actions.
You know, at one point I found that there were, and this was a couple of years ago, that I counted that there were around 2 million environmental organizations that were active on this planet. And I was confused as to why all 2 million hadn't gotten together. And, you know, if it's truly a human issue. And I know that every organization is doing their best and their own thing in order to bring awareness. And there are so many different issues to bring awareness about. But I've always wondered how to bring all of that together. Have you accessed the support, or can you access the support of a collective group of environmental organizations to support you in this case?
What I would say about that is that this case has definitely become a rallying point for so many different organizations. So many different environmental groups that are excited and passionate about massive changes because they see the potential in giving the leadership back to the youth. At the same time, I think part of the reason that we haven't made more progress is because the world sees climate change and sees these environmental issues as just that, environmental issues. The environmental organizations are going to fix it. 350, Sierra Club, Greenpeace. Mm-hmm. They're in charge of fixing it. So as individuals, we kind of use it as a scapegoat for us to not care or not pay attention and not be involved. And even if there was 2 million environmental organizations and people were like, whoa, that's great. Like, why don't they just go ahead and do what the world needs? Like, it's so much bigger than that. It's so much more important of a conversation that we really need to include the voice of everybody else, you know, and people have even a greater stake than an organization. An organization is nothing. And what is impactful and what is meaningful is the movement behind these organizations, the people's lives, and that story that connects all of it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I find the strongest is no matter what the, quote, government is doing, it makes the people even more powerful. Because we realize that we have to take matters into our own hands in as many ways as we possibly can. If someone were to get involved with an organization, where would you say people could start? Where would they start? Would they start with our past? Would they start with our future? Where would be the best place to begin?
I think there are a lot of great organizations out there, community to community, and it depends on how you're trying to get involved or what your specific passions are, whether it's the oceans or food justice or social justice or Black Lives Matter or protecting the environment. There are many people out there that are doing incredible things, and I think one of the places that I would steer people is an organization that I work with called Earth Guardians, simply because I see a lot of environmental organizations and have learned from a lot of them what works and what doesn't work and what tactics are actually creating change in the world and which ones are, you know, outdated and not useful anymore. Earth Guardians is this global network of 250 different crews, individual crews, in like 45 countries that are working to inspire and empower, uplift the voices and the passions of youth within these communities to engage in creating change. And youth are definitely at the forefront of this movement, and it doesn't mean we're the only ones that, you know, have a stake in being involved.
Right.
So what I guess just like specifically, like this organization is all about creating and implementing solutions worldwide. And not just traditional solutions of passing bills and protesting in the streets, but engaging in creative art projects, you know, looking at sports and innovation and technology and science and how we can engage and empower young people's interest in these different things to create a healthy, positive, sustainable future. It really bridges, I think, a lot of the ideas that a lot of these movements have and brings them down into one, to recognizing, like, we're all fighting for a better, cleaner, more healthy, just, sustainable, peaceful world, something better to leave to the next generation. So.
Mm. Yeah,
we're all about bringing everybody together, you know, and working specifically on what kind of world do we want to create together.
Yes, I think that I love the fact that you are in this space and leading this space so strongly. And I also love the fact that maybe for the past 20 years, the environmental conversation has been so pervasive in our languaging that it necessarily wasn't 40, 50 years ago. When we were growing up and our generation was growing up. And I like the fact that it has permeated an entire generation starting, you know, 20 years ago. And so having this conversation, creating movements like this with your friends and peers and our younger generations is not only easier, but it's also, it's more effective. It's more effective because, yeah, the education is growing at such a younger level these days, and it will continue to. I think that has made a significant balance in our world. Now,
we're the biggest generation in the history of the world, the most diverse generation in the history of the world, the most
goodness.
Connected, the most greatest access to technology and information out of anyone in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us massive amounts of power, knowledge, information, and then also with that comes the responsibility. You know, we are responsible to act upon that information and that knowledge, and that's what we're hoping to activate within my peers.
Yep. Now you do a lot of this through music, and I think you've been, how long has it been since you've been singing? Since what, 6 years old? Probably younger.
I mean, making music and singing in hip hop, like, that's been a journey since about 2011. I was like 11 when I started making music and singing for real. I played keys from the age of 7, producing and making beats. And
Wow. That
totally just, I guess, offered itself as a vehicle to create change and inspire people, because music, I saw that music had an impact on people that was very different than just, you know, keynoting or speaking to an audience. And I thought that was really meaningful. That was something we really had to be paid attention to. And for myself, I totally just fell into the passion and the love of creating art and creating art to inspire people and creating art to inspire change. So that journey has definitely taken me really far, you know, playing concerts at stages all over the planet, performing for hundreds of thousands of people. And now about to release my first record, releasing a single tomorrow on all streaming platforms. And really using art to tell my story and as this way to engage young people. If I'm performing in front of 10,000 people at a music festival, that's 10,000 people that probably wouldn't necessarily spend that same time, you know, at an environmental conference.
Wow.
It's a totally different demographic. And it's exciting to see how we can continue to reach people, even though we're not just, it's this idea of approaching this issue differently and approaching the solutions differently. We're not just, you know, standing on the street corner holding signs, trying to get people to drive by to listen to what we're saying, but we're going out there and we're playing these venues, we're playing these gigs, we're in these clubs and bars that we're singing these songs, and those people that are there often to just like party or get lit or like hang out with their friends or just go listen to music all of a sudden they're exposed to something incredibly positive and important and a really critical message. And that's what's so beautiful about using art.
And they respond, which is even more beautiful.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm, the passion comes from within and it makes sense to them, which is beautiful. Where, I know you've done TEDx talks and so forth. Where can people find the new album tomorrow?
So the album doesn't drop until May, but there's going to be a single from the album that's going to be released on all streaming platforms. You can find it Spotify, Tidal, iTunes, Apple Music, anywhere that you can find music. You just type my name in. And I have one single already that I released in September, another single coming out tomorrow, another single dropping before we go on tour. And anybody that's interested in coming to see us play, like myself and my crew, we're going to be doing an 11-city tour down the East Coast from Vermont to Florida each of the way, you know, spreading the music, spreading the positivity, spreading the movement, talking to people. We're going to be outside of the concert every show before the venue, like having these conversations and talking about community and justice. And so that's going to be really inspiring. We're going to be touring with Naco and Medicine for the People, who is a really powerful band, good friends of mine that talk a lot about, you know, social justice and protecting the environment, protecting our rivers, our waters, our mountains, defending sacred indigenous land. So I really love touring with other artists also that have a similar idea of using their music to lift people up. It's very exciting.
That sounds amazing. Now, the spelling of your name, it's X-I-U, and if people want to search this, X-I-U-H, and if you get that far, you most likely will come up. But can you give me the origin of your name?
My name is in a language called Nahuatl, which is a traditional ancient Mexican language. The indigenous, the first peoples of Mexico, spoke this language. Xiutescatl means turquoise mirror. What that kind of represents is a reflection of the sky and the ocean. And it was given to me when I was 6 weeks old. When I was very first born, they didn't have a name for me to put on the birth certificate, so they put me down as Baby Boy Martinez. And so when I was 6 weeks old, I received my name in a naming ceremony in the Black Hills of South Dakota with both Lakota and Dakota elders, as well as my elders from Mexico City. They came, my grandfather, they came to give me my name, my father that was there in the ceremony. And since then, I've definitely carried my name and don't really have any nicknames, you know. For me, it's more than just a title, you know. It's a very much a part of my identity, in the same way that my long hair is, you know, carrying on the traditions of my ancestors.
Now, have you spent much time back at the area that you were born in? And I want to ask you about fracking and Standing Rock and how you're a part of that, or have been a part of that, to lend your voice to what could be done.
Definitely. I was born in Colorado. My roots are in Mexico. I feel that really strongly. I've spent some time back in Mexico. I spent a lot of my early days there. My first language is Spanish. And so definitely I feel very connected to that land, to those ceremonies, to my family out there. Most of my family still lives in Mexico. And my home now is Boulder, Colorado, and one of the biggest environmental catastrophes that we are seeing here is this invasion from the fossil fuel corporations to frack and drill and extract natural gas and oil from our land at the expense of our health, clean water, our climate. The methane that is released in the process of fracking is 70 to 100 times more potent of a greenhouse gas than just carbon over a long period of time. So we recognize that this is not a bridge fuel. It is not a healthy transition away from fossil fuels. This is still ripping apart the planet and tearing apart these communities. And you travel across rural Colorado and you go to these places like Firestone or Greeley, where there are just so many fracking wells that have been drilled. And you talk to and meet these kids and they're sick. Like, these children go into these schools and they talk about these issues and everything from migraine headaches to respiratory diseases to disruption of reproductive systems. It's so deep. And so many studies have been done linking fracking in the fracking fluid in the water and in the air to cancers and to birth defects and to low birth rates high mortality rates in the hospitals around newborn children. And it's just so deep. It's not even just an environmental issue. And that's one thing, like, conservative Republican Coloradans are getting involved in fighting this extractive industry, because it's not about political parties. It's not about who you voted for. It's not about whether or not you believe in climate change. This is about our children. You know, for me, this is about my little brother, my little sister. As the invasion of the fracking continues to move closer and closer to my community, that's what concerns me. Obviously, the greater of humanity, but also it's, like, very personal. So that issue has become a huge fight in which we've undertaken. We filed a petition for rulemaking against the the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And this is kind of a state agency that is supposed to be regulating fracking. Mm. It's supposed to be regulating the impacts and mitigating the effects and assuring that they don't adversely affect the health of the community, the environment. And in the last several decades of their existence, they haven't ever denied a permit for a well to be drilled in the state of Colorado.
Wow.
They are totally bought out by the industry. They are owned by the corporations. So we are demanding that they halt the drilling of natural gas across the Front Range and across Colorado until they do a review of the environmental human impacts of climate change, of fracking on these communities, and come up with a new process of allowing and permitting new wells in the state of Colorado. And the COGCC, they denied our petition. Mm. And we took it to the Court of Appeals, and we presented our argument to the Court of Appeals, working with the same organization that is helping us with a federal lawsuit, actually. And after our argument at the Court of Appeals, the Supreme Court of Colorado has agreed to hear our argument. So
wow.
What we took to the Court of Appeals is now being taken up to the Supreme Court. So hopefully we will see some legal change, and there's a lot of local resistance that's happening. Change comes from all angles. You know, we really have to take all approaches from creative to legal to grassroots resistance and action. And there's a lot going to be done in Colorado to hopefully set a trend and a model for what we can create nationwide that can get us off of fossil fuels.
Wow. So you're really getting into the governmental level, which you have to, because that's where a lot of the corruption is around this. And if you follow the money, you'll find that it's not going to be necessarily done by the organization. We've covered this a lot on the station, so I can freely talk about this. I also want to mention to our listeners, if you have a question for Chutezcat, please give us a call here, 818-985-KPFK. Anything about what you're involved in terms of the environmental movement, or if you have questions for Chutezcat about his involvement, maybe we could get him to sing, maybe. a little bit. But I want you to feel free to give us a call, 818-985-KPFK. Do you have a board of directors that you work with, or a group that you work with that you rely on for your help with this to get it up into these governmental organizations?
There's an organization called Our Children's Trust. They're kind of the legal body in which we've been working with for a lot of these projects, from the federal lawsuit to the state lawsuit. There's just incredible allies and partners of ours. They're partners of my organization, Earth Guardians. So they handle a lot of the legal, the business and a lot of the legal work that goes on behind the scenes. They've actually helped start lawsuits in all 50 states against state governments for a failure to act on climate change. And there's a lot of these states that are continuing to push forward with their lawsuits in the same way that we are at a federal level. They've also supported different local communities and cities to sue their elected officials for failure to act on climate change. So definitely working through my organization, Earth Guardians, and Our Children's Trust, to follow the story and to follow what's going on, definitely check out earthguardians.org or ourchildrenstrust.org.
Okay.
Great resources to stay connected with what's going on with
Thank
the legal
you.
Battle and with the grassroots movement.
Thank you. I'm really, really glad people have lots of resources. You're also going to be speaking at the Conscious Life Expo, which is coming up next weekend. It is the 16th annual Conscious Life Expo. It's February 9, 10, 11. And I believe your talk is on that Saturday night at 6 p.m. It's a keynote in the La Jolla Room. Tell me a little bit about your presentation as we're getting people who are calling in now to ask you questions. But tell us a little bit what you're going to be talking about that night and what you're going to do.
The vibe for that night is to really look at how we can take some of the most important issues of our time and really reframe the way in which we view these issues that hopefully will change people's perspectives on why they're incredibly critical to pay attention to. I'm going to be using the case study of climate change as a case study in which we can see using these different things as lenses in which we view the world. So it'll be really deconstructing the way that we look at specific issues and the way we look at creating change. You know, a lot of people think that change comes from politicians, activists, and you know, people with a lot of power. I think that deconstructing and tearing apart that that belief is going to be really critical to get people to get involved. We're going to be looking at what do solutions look like and what does the future look like in 2018, considering the current administration, considering the failure of action on a federal level, on a governmental level, considering how much resistance and pushback we're getting, from all sides. Like, what is creating the solutions look like? How can you get involved? How can we implement change? And where are we going from here? So it's going to be definitely focused on the call to action.
And, yeah.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Good. All right, we have a couple phone calls coming in. The number here, 818-985-KPFK. My guest is Shutezka. We're talking about Earth Guardians, which is his organization. And let's see, we've got Nick in Hemet on the line. Hey, Nick, how's it going?
Hey. Wow, that was really quick. That must be a little miracle. You know, I'm with a group of brothers and sisters here in Southern California. We're street preachers, Christian street preachers. Our main thing right now is to help people give life. You know, all the young people we meet in Southern California, we tell them, you know, if everybody stopped eating the animals for a start, it would save so much water. Alfalfa growing here in Southern California is the biggest use of water in America, even bigger than fracking. So everybody's got to start feeling good about what they do. You don't have to join any group or anything like that. Every person can do it. Start giving life. Don't be part of slaughterhouses and fences and killing of any living thing. Then you're going to start feeling fulfilled. It's the Christian way. It's a new, you know, not just love your enemy. Love the creation.
The creation.
So
yeah.
Put that into the mix.
Thank you so much.
Nick, thank you so much for your comment.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, brother. I appreciate what you have to say, man. And I totally resonate with that message, too, because before anybody gets involved with the organization or with the collective or in a community, it starts with individual action. And looking at the way that we eat, you know, looking at our diets every single day, that's one of the most significant changes that we can make on a daily basis that affects, that has a positive impact, that can have a positive impact on our environment, on our water use, as Nick was saying, and on our climate. You know, so every single day, three meals a day, that's three chances that we have to make a positive difference. If you look at animal agriculture, it's one of the most environmentally destructive industries on the planet, uses some of the most water out of any industry on the planet, and contributes to climate change. I think it's the second biggest contributor to climate change in the world after fossil fuel industry, more than transportation, more than all transportation combined. So that's super true. And it's not about being vegan. It's not about, you know, putting a label on it. It's just about being aware. I really like that you brought that up. And every single day, every single choice, that ripples out and has an effect. So start there. Start with how you eat. And do your research, find out, watch documentaries, learn about it, and then bring this conversation to your community. Teach other people about it, just like they're doing down there in Southern California, you know, like bring this conversation to other people once you begin to live it in your own life.
Absolutely. Hey, are you willing to do a little bit of your music for us? I know that I'm kind of throwing this at you at the last minute because we don't have something to play, but...
No, that's okay. I knew
you would. Thank you. And in the meantime, we'll get back to the phones in just a minute. The number is 818-985-KPFK. But give us a little bit of inspiration, if you can, Shutezka, on what it is that you're passionate about right now.
And again, a huge part of hip-hop is the performance element. So I know this is just over the radio waves and with no backtrack, but here we go.
Okay.
The power to change the world is in each of our hands. Not the president or government, they still don't understand. We fight for our people, for this planet we stand. As a government and industries walk hand in hand, we will fight for our rights against the tar sands. Take back our streets. This is our land. This is the only home we got. We must protect and not neglect it. Say no to the pipelines. We get the people to reject it. We taking back the power. We bring it to the people. We stand for justice, fight for freedom till we treat it equal. We taking back the power, we bring it to the people. Standing for justice, fight for freedom till we treat it equal. We taking back the power, we bring it to the people. I'm taking back this power, bringing it to my people.
Beautiful. Beautiful. You gave me chills. You don't need music. You don't need music. You got passion, and that's your music. That was absolutely beautiful. And there's so much more. There's, of course, a single that's being dropped tomorrow, which you can check out anywhere. And again, it's Shutezka, and it's Xiuhtezka. CATL, and we have phone calls coming in, so I don't think that you need to go anywhere right now, if that's okay with
cool.
you. All right. Going to Cindy in Moore Park. Hi, Cindy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I hope this isn't off topic. I was just channeling a desire to have a conversation about yoga as a vehicle for healing racial tensions that are starting to surface in society right now. So I'm not sure if that's exactly on the topic.
Well, I'm sure Shuteska has something to say about that because it involves the body and mind and peace.
Yes. And I know that it's evolving. Yoga is evolving in LA, at least, as an art form, like spoken yoga, spoken word, poetry. So
perfect. All right, thanks.
I think yoga is like a super powerful, beautiful vehicle. I'm actually going to head to a hot yoga class here in like an hour, which I'm stoked for. I'm not a yogi. I don't practice yoga all the time. I wish I did. I'm working on that. But I think it's a beautiful bridge of mind, body, and soul. I think we're kind of in this place where people among my generation and, you know, yoga's kind of like a meme topic. You know, it's like it's almost like a trend right now. In the same way that, like, juice bars are a trend, I think yoga's kind of becoming like a trendy thing to do where it's hip to do yoga.
Mm.
And I think that that's great. And I think that that's great because we're involving a lot of more people in a beautiful, sacred practice.
Yeah.
But I think the most important part is to really recognize and, like, uphold the beliefs of, like, the yogic beliefs that it's founded in. And I'm not pretending like I know a whole lot about it. I took a yoga class in Germany with the gentleman that heard one of my presentations the night before. And he then kind of really took what I said in my presentation and brought it into his yoga class. And he was saying, look, yeah, we can come here and like work out and sweat and master these postures and be able to touch our toes and get really flexible. But to follow the beliefs of where yoga comes from is really to have this peace within our mind, our heart, our body, but also bring that peace into the world. So I think that that's, when we can see yoga being implemented not only as a lifestyle change, but as a change in how we treat people and how we affect the community around us, that's when yoga becomes the powerful tool that it can be to bring people together, you know, to alleviate racial tension. I think that's one thing you were talking about, too. Bring yoga to the hood. Bring yoga to people that don't have access to it. Yoga can be a really privileged thing. And how do we engage, you know, minority communities and also these beautiful spiritual practices and engaging our body, our mind, our spirit, and then taking it out into our community. So, yes, I think yoga is an amazing
tool. Oh, yeah. And it can be free, by the way. It doesn't have to be in a class. I mean, yeah, you take the
Everybody got an iPhone. Everybody got a screen, you know.
That and
tutorials all day long.
And some grass. I mean, you can just go outside and you can be in nature and you can really connect with the earth, with whatever you're doing in terms of exercise, as long as it's not harming the environment. I'm a big mountain biker, so I have that's my sanctuary is the mountain.
That's pretty badass.
Oh, it's my favorite thing in the planet because I get to be out there and really I get so many things that are synonymous with the world, especially in what I do with mountain biking. I mean, you go into ruts, you have to climb to do your best. When you get to the top, it's downhill, but then uphill again. I mean, you could tell I think a lot when I'm out there, but it is hours and hours, so I get to really communicate with nature. I loved one of my rides I saw a coyote and a tarantula and a snake all on the same ride, and it was only like an hour. So I get to look at all of that and say, wow, what am I supposed to be paying attention to? It was really fun. All right, let's go back to our phones. Yvonne in Thousand Oaks. How you doing, Yvonne?
Oh, I'm good. Wow, what a wonderful, I've just been loving hearing your guest and all the great work he's doing. And
yes,
I have a 17-year-old daughter who is the daughter of an environmental activist.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of funny to hear I've seen her transition from age 10 to 17 now, and we've been steady volunteering with local organizations in the Santa Monica Mountains. And I just can't say how wonderful it is to hear you and to express to anyone who's listening that we have so many wonderful organizations in our area that you can easily volunteer with. We've been volunteering with Heal the Bay for 6 years, Tree People, Mountains Restoration Trust, Sierra Pacific Fly Fishers, and it's not a lot of time. And I think rather than thinking of the big picture and how you can conquer or solve everything, just little bits, many hands make light work. Mm. And Mother Nature is super forgiving. We do a lot of work on habitat restoration. And to go back a year after working on an area and see that just that little bit of work that we may have done two weekend events, that the recovery happens.
Oh, that is so nice.
Really, it's very empowering because it is overwhelming when you really start looking at we have a lot of issues and a lot of problems that need to be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm up there.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I just want to second everything you're saying. You know, you don't have to go out and change the world or sue the government. Like, everybody on this call and everybody listening, you have the responsibility to get involved at a local level within your life. And then there are so many organizations and so many communities and so many people that are doing the work and have their hands on the earth and are fighting so hard. Every single year, so many people.
Yeah.
Exactly. So volunteer, support, donate, do what you got to do, you know, and they're very welcoming, as you're saying. Thank you for sharing that.
You know what, and I will also say, I ride those mountains, and I really love how beautifully people take care of them. I mean, I respect and love what you do, but also there's not a lot of trash up there. People are not destroying the areas. The biggest destruction is happening by our drought and the fact that we don't have the moisture up there that we need, which is why these California wildfires are the worst in history. And so we are up there no matter what you're doing. If you're hiking, if you're doing yoga, if you're mountain biking, whatever you are doing, make sure that you pay attention to what's going on and around you and really look at the environment around you because you're a part of it. And I saw a bunch of goats out one day that were just taking care of a lot of that fuel that burns and a lot of that cleanup, which is really – I think that goats in the wild and a lot of them would really help with getting rid of a lot of our fuel out here in our mountains that burns so severely. It's really sharp out there. So okay, question about someone's calling in about I don't know if you know anything about the Bay Foundation. Oh, they're not on the line any longer. First Saturday's beach cleanup. You can, of course, get involved here. Can you talk about being a teenager, going to school? Did you go to school, I mean, a lot in high school? Did you participate a lot in your regular classes, like math and history and so forth? How did you handle all that?
History sucks.
I know my daughter's having a hard time.
Not that it sucks. I actually love history. It's really crooked how they teach it, though. It's
right.
Crooked, though. Even still, like, I'm surprised. You know, I'm like, wow, you really allowed to talk about, you know, the civil rights movement in this way? It's very much still kind of like a white-dominated conversation.
I know.
You know, in infrastructure-wise. But I was a great student. You know, I think about that today. I was like, dang, what if I just, like, what if I wasn't passionate about the environment? I would have probably, you know, graduated top of my class. Like, I was so interested in learning and you know, doing homework. And, like, I loved school. You know, I love being academically involved. My teachers loved me. I was like, I don't know. And then come high school, I realized, like, well, this isn't really going to be my path as this person. So I kind of stopped taking it as seriously and just, like, had fun with my friends. I still got good grades, but I just, like, wasn't so, like, seriously involved. I also just, like, totally stepped into such a social part of my life that, like, all of a sudden studying wasn't the most important thing to do on the weekends, you know.
Did you graduate? Did you finish school?
Yeah, I'm in the process of finishing right now.
Uh-huh.
I'm no longer in an institution, though.
Right.
And I'm just finishing up all my credits online at the moment. But, yeah, high school was dope. I had a really great experience. I had so much fun. It was kind of sad leaving my school. Had so many good friends there, but you know, I think education is a wonderful tool to finding out who it is you want to be and how you want to learn. I think there are a lot of broken things about our education system too, but it's a process of learning, and we got a lot of work to do. But
I know. I think about that a lot because, you know, my daughter will come home with all this history and the way that they're explaining specifically the civil rights movement, and I thought that's just perpetuating the problem. I mean, really, there's got to be another way to teach this.
Yeah, definitely. And it's not everywhere. Some places are getting better about it. But, like, the way they teach, like, Native American history and just, like,
right.
Talk about, yeah, it's sad sometimes. But, you know, with the world and the country, like, we're not as far ahead as I feel like we like to believe. And I think being in places like San Francisco or on the coast, like, it's easy to feel like we've made a lot of steps forward. But, like, I was just in rural Minnesota giving presentations in one of the most conservative districts in the entire state. And, like, you got people riding around with Confederate flags on the back of their truck. Minnesota. That's, like, that's as far as you can get in the U.S. Mm-hmm. You know how far from the South that is? Like, there's still so much just, like, miseducation and ignorance and just blind hatred, for real, in this country. That's being perpetuated through our school systems. I was talking to a bunch of, you know, African-American students, and they were like, bro, these kids are racist. These teachers are racist. They are treating us unfairly. And it's institutionalized oppression that still exists, institutionalized racism that still exists, and maybe we can ignore it in some parts of the country, but, like, other people are still really going through it. So just remember that, like, we it's, like, a really privileged thing, first of all, to live in the U.S., but also, like, even just on the coast and in progressive communities where we have access to healthy food, we have access to yoga studios and stuff like that. Like, a lot of the world is still going through it. You know, a lot of our country is still going through it. We have a lot of healing to do.
But what can we do? I mean, how can we change that? I mean, you have great visions on how to change major structures. Where would you start? I mean, yeah. I like the online learning thing. That's kind of a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, it takes personal responsibility. Like, if you're in, you know, a public high school, like, I want to say, you know, I think there's a couple of different conversations, but, like, systemically, we need change, right? We need systemic change. And first of all, I think that means more people need to talk to each other, you know, and there's a man that I one of the only people in the world that I actually look up to as a hero. His name is Van Jones. He's a political commentator and a political activist, a social justice activist and climate justice activist. And, look, the cool thing about democracy is not everybody has to agree, right? Dictatorship, we got to agree. Democracy, we don't have to agree. But the problem is both parties are so divided, and we spend so much time talking about each other, we don't actually end up talking to each other. I'm not talking about debates. I'm not talking about politicians. I'm saying people that, like, fundamentally have different points of views and different opinions. You know, like, I was just out talking to all these kids that don't believe in science and don't believe in, you know, many of them didn't believe in climate change. Many of them didn't believe in, that, you know, Obama was a U.S. citizen because of, you know, dumb shit that Trump is saying. Like, bro, like, it's crazy, for real. So I think we really have to have compassion and love for other people, even people perpetuating oppression. Like, the conversations to really address that oppression, it can't be from, like, anger and hatred and like, pointing fingers and making blame. Like, even for the people that are perpetuating the issue, we have to have compassion, and we have to approach these like, really serious conversations and be really ready for fighting for what it is that we need and what we believe in at a systemic level and also just at an individual level. And it's really big, so what I would focus on for everybody listening is lifestyle changes. Show compassion. If you see oppression and if you see discrimination, like, call it out. Be a white ally. If you're a white person and you see that discrimination against a Muslim person or somebody else, a person of color, call it out. Be a white ally. Come to Black Lives Matter events. If you care about the environment, come to Black Lives Matter events, because those two movements are so incredibly tied together. If you look at environmental issues, it predominantly affects people of color. You know, women's rights. If you went and marched in a women's march, you should come march at a climate justice rally, because one of the best ways to address climate change is to educate women and advocate for the reproductive rights. And one of the biggest demographics of people affected by climate change are poor women of color. You know, so these movements are connected. So play your part within your community. That's where the healing has to begin. It has to begin within yourself, and it has to begin at home in your community. And then eventually, once you're there, then we can talk about bringing it out into the world, bringing it out to the rest of the country. And yeah, we have a lot of work to do.
We do. What is your daily practice, if I can ask you? How do you start your day, and in where you live and so forth? And how do you bring it into your life?
Yeah, daily practice, wake up, brush my teeth. A lot of people, like, what I realize is I always brush my teeth before breakfast, right? And I realized as soon as I started having sleepovers at other friends' house, like, everybody brushes their teeth after breakfast. And I was like, why would you do that? Your breath tastes horrible when you wake up. Like,
yeah.
Definitely do that first thing you do when you wake up.
Thanks for sharing.
So that's one thing that I do that might be weird to the rest of the world, but I brush my teeth before, like, first thing, straight up. Get out of bed, brush your teeth.
All right.
And I like to meditate daily. Like, if I don't always do well with that, you know, it gets difficult on the road and such, but sometimes I'll drop into things where I'm meditating for half an hour every morning, working out, exercising. Like, I love to be physically active and do parkour and play sports and stuff. So, you know, be in good shape. And then, I mean, I like to do yoga. I like to stretch, like, but then making music.
Music every day. I heard that in the background. Was that you playing in the background?
Oh, the little ukulele. I stumbled into it.
you have it in your hands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm in my room.
Play! Okay.
I'm always on the phone with people. Always calls and interviews. And
okay, well, you're on live radio right now, and you got a ukulele in your hands. You're not going to let me get away with that one. Do you have more for us to hear?
I can't actually really play the ukulele. I just got it for Christmas, and so I'm still very much in a...
I'm sure you can.
Learning stages. But maybe next time.
Do you have a keyboard by you?
I have a keyboard that isn't plugged in. It's connected through MIDI to my computer.
Okay. Well,
but I'm gonna send you music so you can play it on your show next time.
Oh, thank you. I know we really should have thought about that ahead of time. All right, so we have 3 minutes left, and I would love it if you could inspire us with another communication. It's not a song, but something from your new album, maybe.
Yeah. For sure.
Good.
Yeah, this one's deep, so please listen carefully.
Got it.
You see, rappers ain't the only ones to chase paper. Politicians play the role of leading, but leadership's at an all-time low. Follow the dollar, rigged elections and phony bills, executive orders reinforce borders while oil spills, crisis across the nation, real issues drowned by entertainment. He don't stand for people, his whole agenda is soaked in hatred. Putting these stories in my verse is how I document it. Fearing for my people because they label us undocumented. We haven't seen an end to oppression and violence. Rubber bullets, metal shrapnel, followed by silence, meant to protect people. Not police have turned militant. The citizens resisting this incident are innocent. Shutting down prayer camps, canceling climate negotiations. Nothing is changing. I'm sick of being patient. I'm sick of you, your complacence. The time we wasting with money chasing. Now there's poison in the water basin. Blood on the concrete, cops taking black lives. Someone's father, someone's son, more than just a black life. My flag is hung upside down. Democracy is threatened. The youth are crying for help, but still we fail to listen. Fires on the mountainside, rising of the seas. My people sick of oppression, so we take into the streets. The power of the people's more powerful than people in power. Faced with the end, with our lives and legacy on the line, you're telling me there's no time deciding our own fate. I believe this can be our finest hour. I said the power of the people's more powerful than people in power. Mm. I believe this can be our finest hour.
Mm. I love that. The power of the people is greater than the people in power. That
Straight
is beautiful.
Up.
Well, thank you so much. I so appreciate you joining me today and your time. I know an hour is a long time, so thanks for hanging in with me and for talking with us and sharing your ideas. Again, you can see, first of all, you can get his single, which is dropping tomorrow, Shitezcat, tomorrow at on all sorts of different media outlets. You can look up his TEDx talk. You can find out more at earthguardians.org, and you can find out more there. And see Shitezcat in person at the Conscious Life Expo, which is coming up next weekend, Saturday, February 9 through 11, he's going to be speaking on the Saturday, which is the 10th, and it is at 6 p.m. where you can see Shitezcat speak, but you can also hear the rest of everyone who's going to be there speak as well. Carolyn Mace is on the Friday night. And, of course, George Norrie is going to be there. I'm going to be on his panel in the middle of the afternoon on Saturday, and a media panel Sunday morning. Judith Orloff, Gail, Lynn McTaggart, all sorts of amazing people are going to be there. John Sally, David Wilcock, Eric Pearl, lots of great people. So check it out. It is can be found at consciouslifeexpo.com, and it's at the LAX Hilton. So it's local here. It's next weekend, not this Saturday and Sunday, but next Friday, Saturday, Sunday with the post-conference on that Monday. Lots of exhibitors. It's a lot of fun. Great community. Great time to connect with people. There's lectures, free lectures, panels, keynotes, all sorts of fun things going on. And I will be there, so I will run into you all in the hallways. You can look it all up online where I'll be on Saturday and Sunday as well. So thank you so much for joining us, and I so appreciate your time and your mission, and thank you for guiding our youth and our adults. Thanks, Shitezcat. Talk to you soon. I'll see you. All right.
Cheers. Appreciate the time. Bye-bye.
Bye. And thank you so much to Gina Salvati, executive producer here of the show, Joyce Walker, producer, and Kiana, thank you so much for engineering today at KPFK. And thank you all so much for listening. It's your energy that makes this show happen. I am Lisa Garr, and thank you for staying aware.